Hello and welcome to Climate Cheesecake. I'm Sankar, an educator, co-founder of the Herpetological Society of Singapore, and I'm currently pursuing my PhD at NUS, working on assessing potential reptile reintroductions to Singapore. Climate Cheesecake is brought to you by the Cheesecake Collective and powered by Artwaves Studio. If you like our content, please subscribe and give us a positive review wherever you get your podcasts. Movin, so yes. The other day, I was in my garden, right? And
you have a garden?
Well, it's kind of like, you know, like the HDB block. And then there's outside, there's like the lift landing. And then you just grow plants there.
Yeah.
And technically, you're not supposed to.
Oh. But okay, so...
we have some plants there. It's fine. It's fine. Nobody said anything so far. So we have some plants there. And every time I put a new plant there, it dies.
Oh.
Within a matter of weeks, it dies. But okay.
But it sounds like a you problem.
I thought so. I really did. And I actually was pretty sure that I had a black thumb. Until I actually planted something that my friend gave me. It was a Hoya. Hoya diversifolia, I think.
Okay.
Right? And so that plant, I planted it inside soil that I bought from a nursery rather than soil that I kind of just dug up from outside my house, which is what I normally do. I don't know if I'm supposed to be confessing this on podcast, but whatever, we'll go with it, right?
Yeah, okay.
And the Hoya is actually doing pretty good. And then I guess it kind of made me think about, you know, normally I think of soil as just like dirt, right? But that soil actually makes a really big difference in whether the plant that's growing in it does well or not.
Like, you know, like even the type of soil influences the type of plants you'd find in the wild anyway, right? So soil is super important.
Super important.
Everything you see in the whole world in nature is influenced by what lies underneath, which
is
soil.
And I hear that right now we're going through a soil crisis. And so to share a little bit more about this and what we can do about it, we have Hansing and Aditi from...
Living Soil Asia.
It's like we practiced it. Yeah, so... Guys, tell us a little bit more about yourselves, about Living Soil Asia, and what you do.
Yeah, sure. My name is Han Jing. I am the research lead as well as a facilitator at Living Soil Asia. So what I do is we actually lead community-led action research that we work with people on the ground to do research on soil here in Singapore. And this is really important because there hasn't been a lot that is being said about soil, the type of soil that we have and also the potential that we have with regenerating it.
Mm.
Yeah. So what we are trying to do at Living Soil Asia is really to try to help people reconnect with soil. Yeah. So through our research, we have a lot of findings, actually a lot of cool findings through our current project where we work with the gardeners on the ground. And with our findings, we actually fit this into our education pod, where we run courses and workshops to talk about soil and link it to the larger climate and also how it connects to us as well. Yeah, maybe Aditi, you want to share more about that?
Yeah. So my name is Aditi and I am part of Living Soil Asia as well. And I am currently the education lead and a curriculum cultivator. So that's something we came up with and then I like that. So I just stuck to it. Like Hansing said, I feel like soil is quite misunderstood. And, you know, just like how you pointed out, right, it's dirt. And it's interesting because like language really comes into play here, right? So what does dirt mean? What does soil mean, right? And there's so much association to it, right? And so in our education programs, we do a lot of like unpacking of what like of language, but then we also try to use a lot of like hands-on things. Aside from soil, like of course soil, but we also try to do a lot of hands-on activities and things so that there's a tangible connection back to soil. But then we also want people through our education programs to make a lot of those mental and emotional connections back to soil, right? Because, I mean, with soil also comes land, with soil comes memory, with soil comes the food we eat, you know, we break bread together. It connects to so much of our lives. You know, the air we breathe is connected to the soil, right? So everything is, you know, so it's just, yeah, there's just so much to unpack there. And that's what we try to do through our education programs.
What was one of the most surprising things you guys learned when you guys started this or were involved in this? Because you guys are probably the people who have the closest or like the most contact with soil in this country, I would assume.
Yeah, I wouldn't call ourselves experts, but I think we are very curious people. Let's just put it that way.
Okay.
And one of the biggest findings that I had during the research, I think, is maybe the current state of our soil here in Singapore. Mm-hmm. So the soil here in Singapore is very clayey in nature. Don't quote me on this, but I was reading that the soil here in Singapore used to have a pH of 4.3, so it's pretty acidic in the forest.
Mm.
But over time, through our research, we found that across all the gardens, the soil now is around pH 8 or more, so it's very alkaline.
No way.
Yeah, so which made us like so puzzled, because if you read all the textbooks, the experts are going to tell you that, oh, if your soil is at pH level 8, your plant is not going to have certain types of nutrients, da-da-da-da-da. But these gardens that we work with, the plants are still growing and they're still doing okay.
Okay.
Which made us then, huh, like, what's going on, right? So then that's where I realized soil microbiology is actually so much, it's also very important. And that's an aspect that people don't really look at. Yeah, and the other thing is also bringing back to the state of the soil here in Singapore. Through our research, we also found that there was so much construction debris that was found in all of the gardens, whether it's private land, whether it's in community gardens, whether it's in schools, whether it's in private homes, across the board. If you dig down, sometimes 10 cm, sometimes 15 cm, you're going to hit rocks. We found toilet bowls, we found gloves, we found plastic bottles, all sorts of stuff that you can imagine. So imagine if you are a gardener trying to grow, or imagine you're a plant.
Yeah.
Just trying to do your thing and trying to like push out the roots.
You're just trying to live an honest life.
Yeah. And you're pushing out your roots and you just keep hitting these blockages.
Oh, like the
all this toilet bowl, exactly. Like then how is that gonna, you know, allow you to grow healthily, right? And have like a established root system. Right, so we found that for soil regeneration to happen first, a lot of this rubbish does need to be taken out, and it has to be taken out by our bare hands. So that's usually like one of the most tiring but also, I guess, fulfilling work to do that all gardeners have to go through when they are doing soil regeneration here.
That's incredible.
Yeah. I actually, like, that pH thing is super interesting, and I think I may have a hypothesis to explain that. It's because of the cement. Okay, basically, like, I also work a lot in freshwater habitats. And, like, one of the worst things that you can do to freshwaters in the region is to build or pour concrete nearby. Because concrete jacks up the pH like crazy.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, like, forest is 4.3. Outside of forest is 8. And you guys keep finding cement. It must be the cement that just keeps leaching and just, like, raising the pH of everything.
It's so interesting.
That's what we think, too.
Because, like, to get the cement, you have to get it from, like, limestone casts and, like...
Yeah.
Like, you're demolishing an ecosystem there and then using that...
And we talked about that last season.
We talked about that in last season one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Reference. So, and now that is, like, causing all this impact to us.
Yeah, you still, it's like you do something terrible to do something else that's also terrible, yeah. You know.
And it's so strange because, to me, like, my conception of soil has always been, like, you know, when I was in NS, I was just, like, digging with a charcoal, right? And yeah. I was like, this soil... in my mind, has been here forever.
Yeah.
And then to hear that, you know, there's plastic bottles, there's toilet bowls, there's all this evidence of humanity just like living under that and affecting it, changing the way that soil works as well. It just kind of makes me question everything, kind of.
But it also makes me so sad because it's kind of like we talk about Singapore as this urban space, but then even the spaces that we're like, we see as green and less urban, it's actually just urban. It's just underneath. The toilet bowl is just underneath. Right? Yeah.
Actually, I would really like to jump off from what you're saying, because you're saying, you know, when you were at NS and like, you know, with the charcoal, and you think that, you know, soil is just, you know, we view it as something that's so static or like, you know, it's not dynamic at all. And actually that it's the exact opposite if it has that opportunity to be that, right?
Right.
So if there's enough microbiology there, oh my gosh, soil is like alive and buzzing and it's wild,
it's
right?
A
and
sourdough starter.
Yeah, and even more expansive than that, right? Like, because when we think of sourdough starter, we think of like one kind of yeast or like a couple of types of yeast. But I mean, one teaspoon of soil can have a billion type of microbes, right? That's wild to think.
Yeah.
And like, just like how we, I mean, so one, the thing that surprises me, that surprised me most about soil was just how dynamic a space can be. And it's just, you know, be it like the forest or even, you know, because when we talk about a forest, sometimes we think about it as so static, but there's actually so much happening, right?
Totally.
At so many different levels. The forest is above the ground and the soil is below the ground.
But same
so
story.
It's actually the same thing. And that's actually why at Living Soil, we talk about how we can only have healthy communities if we have healthy soil, because they mirror each other. Mm. Unless we don't take care of community, we're not taking care of our soil either. They're so interconnected. And I think that was the biggest thing that landed for me when we were, you know, doing the work that we were doing. And yeah, so I mean, that whole dynamism of it was what blew my mind.
I love that. I think that brought a tear to my eye when you said, like, the forest is as much underground as it is above
it
ground.
It makes so much sense. Also, jumping off from that, what you said, so, like, last week we spoke to GUI, and there was this real big consensus on, like, you know, like, planting or feeding people with food that you grow, right? There's a sense of losing that in Singapore, right? We lose a sense of, like, where our food comes from. And, like, you know, hunting before this, we were just talking about how you plant a lot of stuff and you grow a lot of stuff. How much do you think... You know, how much do you think Singaporeans have been affected by the fact that we've just sort of lost touch, literally, with the soil? Like, how often does the average Singaporean ever touch soil at all, right?
Not enough.
Right, exactly.
For sure, not enough. And also, I also want to point out that when I say system, it's not like one person, right? But it's also set up such that you're not meant to, like, don't walk on the soil, right? Yeah. Or, like, the walkways are also, everything is paved, everything is sheltered, everything is...
And the soil is dirty.
And it's, yeah.
And soil is,
and soil
don't
is something
it,
that you're supposed to... It has germs, right? So germs is such a big thing. And this is not just, you know, in Singapore. This is, like, a global phenomenon, right?
Yeah.
And it's so interesting because we actually had this conversation once, right? Where, like, Hansing was like, oh, you know, we were talking about something about walking on off the path. And then Hansing was like, oh, but won't that be terrible for the soil, right? Because you end up... Because we're talking about it, we're talking about compaction, right?
Yeah.
And so then, I was like, oh, but then you never get to walk on soil in Singapore because otherwise everything is paved. Like, even if you go to a park, and our parks are really amazing and things, but everything's paved. Like, so where do you have that? Like, I have a young son. Where is he going to get to run in grass except for, like, a park, which is, like, a very designated space? Like, when does he get to, like, have his feet in grass and just have that whole, like...
Experience.
Yeah, yeah, you know what I mean? And even that tactile experience, but then also just, like, that broader experience, like, climbing a tree.
Yeah, absolutely. I know. When we talk about climbing a tree so much, because one of my lifelong goals in my life is to climb a tree. And I did to you, and when I told that to her, she was like,
oh, just like, what?
You've never climbed a tree?
Yeah, like,
you must think all our childhoods are so depressed. Okay, but in some cases,
deprived,
yes.
But actually, it just goes to show, right? Like, it's set up from so young, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's dangerous to do, to climb a tree.
Or it's scary, or it's dirty, or you'll get...
Yeah, whatever the reasoning is, right? So it's just the whole... That's where the education part comes. And when I say education, we don't mean, like, instruction and education. Our education is actually just having open conversations very similar to this one.
Oh, yeah.
But we're just doing it in a workshop setting. So, like, we put something in front of people and, like... have a conversation about it and then, like, bring up all of this, right? And that's what's so important, is unless we don't have these conversations, you don't get to learn things.
And who are the people who come for these workshops? Like, do you feel that their perspectives before are very, like, normie and you find that you have to shift their perspectives? And how does that look in all these
I think
outreach?
At Living Soil, we don't really judge people. We sort of, like, accept them and meet them where they are.
That. We don't judge people.
I'm kidding.
Sorry. I mean, we meet them where they are.
Yeah.
Right? So we are usually very curious again about where people are and where they come from.
Right.
So wherever we have all sorts of people that come to our courses. So we have some chefs. We have people working in the government sector. We have people who are fresh out of uni. We have gardeners as well who are just trying to deepen their understanding with soil.
Yeah.
Right? Because even though they have been working with soil for so many years, they maybe they want to further understand, like, that connection.
Dig deeper.
Yeah, dig deeper.
I love that. You know, that's what we're going to keep
this episode title right there.
Right.
Yeah. So we usually just try to help guide some of these conversations to flow. But naturally, somehow, after the course, people usually say that they're worldview has sort of, like, expanded and shifted, and they start caring, like, in a different way. Like, they realize that, oh, the clouds are related to soil, and the water that we drink and the food that we eat, and so much, like, everything is just...
And this is where the power of stories come, right? Is as soon as you have a story to something, you feel so much more connected to it, right? And that just comes up. So, just like Hansing is saying... We have, like, a lesson plan, right? And, like, you know, what, like, we want to convey from our workshop.
Yeah.
But, like, it's not really, like, directive. So it's a lot of, like, what happens and what comes up from the people. So, like, each of our runs has been so different, right? A, from the personality of the people who've shown up, but then B, also just from what they're, their own life and lived experiences have been. So then they end up asking different questions, and then that kind of really redirects the direction of that one particular lesson. So it could honestly, sometimes it goes from like A to like Z, but otherwise it goes from like A and then like zigzags around and shows up somewhere else. You know what I mean? So it's very not, it's not directive. Like our workshops are very like open up the space and see what happens, you know?
Right.
So it's really fun. And I feel like that's kind of the approach we're trying to do in general with our work. And I mean, that's also kind of what we hope for the world. Like show up and then hope that the world will also show up that way.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so that's the idea.
Yeah.
Because we know a little bit about soil, but then people know about mining. And we don't, like, we've had, you know, students who've come who've been in mining and they've been like, so do you know what all the different like things that people have to go through to even do any of that industrial mining and things? And so it really just opens up, like, even for us, right? Like for petroleum and things like that here in Singapore. So yeah.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, as the climate changes, we want to be more reliant on local sources of food. And Living Soil Asia, Hansing was mentioning earlier that you don't just work in Singapore, it's all over Southeast Asia and beyond as well, right? So could you share a little bit about how communities in these spaces, what is it, what would be your call to action for people in these spaces as we transition into like a post-climate society? How can we fix our soils?
Yeah.
Big question, sorry.
So how can we regenerate our soil? I think that's a very important question, especially in Singapore where people are like, do we even have soil here? Is there even space for soil?
That's actually, unfortunately, like very real perspective that I may have heard more than once.
But in our last course called Reimagining Our Soil Story, we want to redirect that narrative and let's take a moment to look around us. Do we really not have soil here in Singapore?
Yeah.
We do. Under our void decks, there are grass patches everywhere, right? There's soil everywhere. So the question then is like, what can we do to help to regenerate the soil and to connect and care better for the soil, right? And for me, it's always about starting to grow your own food, no matter where you are. Mm. You can be in the HDB, you can grow something, right? Just grow something that's maybe more native and that will be able to thrive.
Even if it's in a pot, right?
Yeah, even if it's in a pot, exactly. That's how I started, along my HDB corridor. And then that's how everything just sort of like shot off from there.
Mm-hmm.
Or even like start composting, right? Maybe you can't do it in your own home. Visit a community garden that's nearby or talk to people about soil regeneration. Come for the course and like spark conversations. Listen to a podcast.
Yeah.
Right? These are all like small things that people can do that make a difference in some way or some form, right? Mm-hmm. And I think what's most important is that people just need to start caring more and start like becoming more connected. Start touching soil.
And with the soil itself, like what changes can be made to our soil that fix it?
You go.
So much. Because we are blessed with Singapore's climate. And some people might say like, oh, Singapore is really hot and everything. But it's the perfect weather for soil regeneration. Composting, for example, overseas, it can take like 12 months or so, right? In Singapore, 3 months or even less. Things will start to
decompose
like, so fast. And because of the temperature, microbes can also populate really, really quickly here. So we have found that, like for instance, at my grandma's garden, 3 months from nothing to like a whole food forest, mini food forest that has grown, right? At one of the gardens that we worked with in the school, 6 years, we got this much of topsoil now. So this is about
30 to 50 cm for those who are listening.
Yeah, it's insane. And it was previously, it was just like, again, lots of construction debris underneath. It was just grass on top because they built a sports school. So it went through like a whole construction and everything.
What I'm hearing is that there's really a need for a lot of intention. When it goes into this, it's not something that's just going to happen by itself. We actually have to want it and we actually have to do it.
And replenishing those nutrients, using composting, getting rid of stuff that is perhaps ruining the pH, like, you know, construction debris that's buried under for God knows how long.
Yeah, so creating the right environment for these microorganisms and even people, communities to start to grow and start to build.
Yeah, so like what I'm hearing is really about changing, not just about changing the soil, but changing about people's relationship with the soil. Totally.
That's
right?
The first step for sure.
Yeah. But like I think in Singapore especially, like people don't even want to touch soil.
Yeah.
Like it's exactly, in our programming. Precisely. Have you beaten your programming?
Have I what?
Have you unprogrammed yourself from wanting to touch soil? Are you...
Melvin, you've known me for like 12 years. You know that I fell into a pond in front of you.
Yeah, but you make it sound like it was a willing choice. Like, I shall fall into this pond. You kind of tripped. Yeah, but I like to say that I've undone my programming because sometimes I feel like I'm just touching the soil and then I'll eat food and I sometimes don't even wash my hands.
Awesome. Yeah.
Look at you.
Yeah. MOH would like to have a
look at you. Me getting that microbiome into my microbiome.
Oh yeah. Like, I mean, all these actions that can be taken, right? But what about on a more national level? What are some changes that you hope to see, you know, from the top down, right? About how our landscape can be, I guess, managed better or what is already being done to manage the landscape?
I think this all relates back to the direction that we are currently taking, right? Tech is such a big part of our lives and it's what's really changing the agricultural landscape. So the type of agriculture... mainstream agriculture that is honestly pushed and, you know, supported and encouraged is soilless farming. And there's something that is not the kind of agriculture that we feel like is good for our ecosystems, is good for us, is good for our communities, is good for, you know, the earth, right? And so I think that would be the biggest picture thing is to just, that's why one of our courses is called Reimagining Our Soil Story is, can we imagine a world otherwise? Like, you know, because right now the world that we seem to be wanting to create is one that is, you know, AI driven in agriculture or is like sensor driven or it's, you know, indoor farming. And actually, the narrative we are pushing personally me, but also even the organization is not that this needs to like exit. That's not the point. What we're really pushing for is diversity. Mm. Is because no one really knows, right? 50 years down the line, no one can like vouch for any of these. Mm. And even for soil, we don't know what will happen to soil in 50, 80 years from now. We hope that it goes the route of, you know, 30 cm of topsoil. That would be amazing, yeah. Right? But I mean, we don't know. So the point is that diversity builds resilience.
Yeah, you don't want to put all your
eggs
in one
basket. Exactly,
yeah.
Right? And yeah. So the idea is that to have all kinds of farming, right? So to have soilless farming, indoor farming, vertical farming, hydroponics, aquaponics, right? AI-driven agriculture, but also soil-based farming, right? And the last two soil-based farms closed last year. So we don't really have any soil farms in Singapore anymore. And that's a big part of, you know, the position we're in. So yeah, I think that is something that we would be the first thing that we would talk about. And then the second would be just, again, the accessibility to agriculture, right? Like right now, there's a lot of community farms and things, but I mean, there's a certain demographic that goes there, right? There's like aunties and uncles and, you know, hopefully, you know, they do bring their like, you know, their grandkids or, you know, nieces and nephews, and that's great. But it's as more and more people start going to community gardens, start going to gardens and talking about that I actually care about where my food is coming from and I'm actually asking questions or, you know, using your dollar to like voice what your preferences are. All those things make a difference. And so I think that would help shift the needle.
Mm. Yeah. And I think like on a national level, education also really needs to change a little bit, right? Because I was just talking to a geography teacher and she was saying about how there are so many topics that are going to be removed from the syllabus. From, I don't know if it's next year onwards or so, right? So people are not going to learn so much about the geological side of things and it's more about human geography, right? Which is also important. But then how are people going to learn about soil and rocks and the weather and the climate? All these topics are going to be removed, right? So, because to me, education is always like a very strong passion of mine because I think that we need to allow children to be able to have that connection from young.
Yeah.
And many of the children do want to have that connection. Right? When I run programs on the rooftop gardens with the kids, they are the ones who are like, oh, earthworm. And then like soy. And they're grabbing this, grabbing that. And they're having so much fun, right? Yeah. Connecting with it and learning about where their food comes from. And I think that every child should have the right to learn about soy and to be connected to it.
Oh, that's lovely.
That's really, really
cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, so my son the other day, I'm growing kale and tomato right now. He picked up a leaf and he like shoved it in his mouth and I was like, yes. Because otherwise, I mean, he's not like eating kale willingly on the dining table.
Yeah.
But because he planted the seed himself, He's seen it grow. He's watered it. There's a connection to it now, right? Mm. And then he's curious. And now he keeps asking, when's the tomato coming? Like, when can we eat the tomato, right? Like, so, I mean, there's like a story with it now, right? And there's like, you know, there's like a seeker, like, you know, there's
ownership.
Like, yeah, exactly.
And that's something that that's I'm really seeing with like a lot of our guests, right? That we're actually, what is really important is the sense of ownership over our food and our climate futures as well, right? Because it's only when we take that action that we can actually see that change in the future as well. I really love this podcast because it gives me and you the chance to like meet some really amazing people.
Thank you. Like talk about things that we would never otherwise talk about. Let's
be real.
I would
not
right?
have actually thought about soil at all, actually. Yeah. So thank you so much, Hansing and Aditi, for joining us today. And thank you for sharing the soil story.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Yeah. This was wonderful.
Really enjoyed it.
Have you guys been on other podcasts?
No.
No. First
podcast. Yay!
Climate Cheesecake is brought to you by the Cheesecake Collective and powered by Artwave Studio. You can find us on Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok at Climate Cheesecake. Go follow us!